Clean contact.
I'd hit it again because that shot was a defining moment. And when a defining moment comes along, you define the moment, or the moment defines you.
Here it comes. Oh my goodness.
Hello and welcome to the Golf Practice Podcast. My name is Andy Hayes, and with me live over Zoom is Peter Donahue. Pete.
At the cube, Andy.
How is it over there?
It's dark mostly. No, it's great as always. It's just very private and sometimes kind of lonely. I miss you guys and all the fun that we have in here. But still, if you've got to be sequestered or quarantined someplace, this is a pretty good place to be.
Yeah, I'd say. I saw your video working on your right and left-handed swings. Anything new come up today while you're there?
No, I haven't gotten after it yet today, but it really is interesting to me. I started rereading a book not too long ago about motor learning, and in it, as they're saying in the book, motor learning is something that's difficult to see. In fact, it's almost impossible to see, except through performance. You don't really see the processes that are going on. But as an athlete, you can experience the processes as you're doing what you're doing, even though, you may not be able to score any better in a game. You can feel there's something going on, and that's, to me, what's interesting. And so, it's the opportunity to play with clubs as an extension of your hands and your arms and appreciate them for, tools for getting the ball off the ground in the direction you want it to go is endlessly fun.
Yeah. How do you still find, you've been doing this a long time. How can you still just like go there and have fun doing exploring?
Yeah, I think it's because golf and golf in particular, not that it's unique in the regard that anything you pursue, the more you do it, the more you're going to see in it, because your capabilities are going to increase, and that's going to lead you to new challenges. And so, and sometimes the challenges are measured on the outside and sometimes they're measured on the inside. And so, where you're, I think things that help me a lot are things like exercise. And when you're get older, you've got to exercise because your body is getting stiffer and you're losing muscle mass. And never having been someone who was particularly driven to work out, of necessity, I need to exercise just to maintain, or try to, not slip so fast in maintaining my skills. And so as I exercise, I find that I become more aware of things. New muscles pop up and new abilities are there, and so there is no end to the climb, and I think that golf, really, because it's a stick and ball game, it takes you to the roots of your love for it, which is a childish or childlike fascination with watching the ball and seeing how you can develop movements that, that make you more capable, more successful.
Yeah, that's really cool. So the reason we're talking today is that this week, one time per day, I'm talking with people about my five Masters memories. These are not an attempt to say these are the best Masters moments. These are just the ones that kind of come to mind when I think of the Masters. And one of the first ones that came to mind was Phil Mickelson winning the Masters and jumping in the air in celebration. Have you ever jumped on a golf course before?
I don't remember ever having jumped on a golf course. I don't know. I mean, I hope so, but I don't remember it offhand. I mean, that was just such a beautiful moment. It really is, you know, an iconic moment of joy and release and relief. And it was something that was just shared by everybody that was there that day and that watched it.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of the most iconic jumps in golf. I think of that one, and I think of Sergio Garcia had that shot. I think it was at a PGA where he like ran after it and then jumped up the hill.
Oh yeah,
I mean,
yeah, Medina. Yes, yeah, the total exuberance. Yes, those were two really moments of great exuberance in the game, which is great to see, because it's not you see it. Well, no, I mean, you see Tiger, you know, making dramatic moves, and there's been a lot of, if you played all the putts that went in the Masters Championships, it would make quite a gallery, wouldn't it, of movements.
Oh, yeah.
But Phil's jump was, you know, the jump of, he got panned for the move, of course, because, you know, it wasn't much of a jump. He didn't exactly, if you were going to measure his vertical leap, it might have been, I don't know, 3 inches.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't
basically
much.
His feet just went out to the side. But it was very cool nonetheless.
Yeah, it was. That's really my first, one of my first memories of Phil. In doing some research of this, I found that was his first major win. He finished tied for third the previous three years at the Masters. So he's been close like time and time again. What kind of memories of Phil do you have when he was like kind of starting out and getting going?
Well, Phil was he was a tremendous talent right away. You know, he had this, kind of swashbuckling, not kind of, he was a swashbuckling, risk taker. You know, some of his shots that he's pulled off are just absolutely incredible when you think about it. And sometimes, you know, he had to even lie to his caddy about it, you know, because his caddy wanted him to play smart and would point out, and he think they have an agreement on a plan, and then Phil would go to his ball and see a opening through the branches and go for it. So he was tremendously talented, but he was yoked with that heavy weight of being the best player never to win a major. And as you say, you know, the three ties in the majors or at the Masters were wonderful accomplishments, but they were indictments more than they were accomplishments, as you know, according to the press. And so whether Phil felt the pressure that everybody of the storylines that everybody was putting out in the golf world about him or not, I think it would have been hard for him not to. So, you know, this as he went to the Masters, as you probably remember, he was having a tremendous year. He had he hadn't had a good year the year before, and he had kind of taken stock of himself and rededicated himself. And he came out the year and he won at Pebble Beach, I think. And he was having a terrific year coming in, but of course, you know, the story still persisted. You know, can this be the time? Will this be the moment? And Jim Nantz, of course, you know, did a great job of building that story and the drama all weekend.
So that day, Phil actually went out. He shot 38 on the front nine, two over, And he was down by one to Ernie Els going into the back nine, but then he shot a bogey-free 31 with birdies on five of the last seven holes. And then, of course, birdied 18 to win. I remember Phil's jump from this, but I didn't remember, man, birdying five of the last seven holes to win is quite impressive.
Yeah, yes, it is. But, you know, you see, that's what happens, isn't it, on most Sundays there. The winner gets hot on the back nine. And that what makes the golf course so interesting is that the design makes it one of the great golf courses in the world, because there's opportunity and danger, you know, everywhere. You know, 1-9, you know, you think, oh, people shoot 31 on the back nine there, it must be easy, but it isn't easy. You know, KJ Choi, who was in this tournament and I think finished third, you know, as a, for instance, went out, I think Saturday, and ripped up the front nine, shot 30 on the front nine, and then shoots 40 on the back nine, where Mickelson shoots 31 on Sunday. So, you know, what?
Yeah, nine-shot difference.
Nine-shot difference. I mean, the greens are just so terrific that, you know, when players are feeling it and they can hit their spots on those greens, you know, they can make great scores. And the interesting thing in this is that, you know, Ernie, who is, you know, really a footnote in this thing, Ernie goes out and plays, you know, a great round. Now, he has troubles on the back nine as far as, like, getting his ball on the green in regulation, but he just does this high wire act with his up and down game and, you know, gets to the final hole. And he hits it in the bunker on 18, and but gets out, you know, hits it out of the bunker up onto the green. He's got a 20-footer and doesn't make a great attempt at it. And that's what, you know, leaves the door open for Phil's heroics. When Phil gets to 18, DeMarco is in a bunker, fluffs the first one, then, you know, just takes a swing at the next one and hits it, and it ends up going just beyond Phil's ball. And so, and people are laughing because, you know, this really seems like destiny. You know, now Phil's going to get a read from DeMarco, and he does. And then Phil hits his, you know, 18 footer down the hill, and it catches the left side of the cup and tumbles into the hole, and then we get the jump, and, you know, we all were just, you know, so thrilled that this guy, who is, you know, one of the very most popular people in the whole game, you know, comes through and shakes off the weight of never having won a Masters, wins the Masters green jacket, and does it in amazing fashion.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the themes that keeps coming up as I go through these is how lucky you have to be to win. Like, yeah, Phil had to be there and make the putts, but there seems like there's a big break or something happens with your playing competitors. Tiger last year, when he won twice on 13 on two different rounds, hits it, his drive so far left, like it could have been in the hazard, but it somehow bounces out into the fairway. If just one of those, you know, is a penalty stroke, he doesn't win the tournament or isn't as close. And then Phil gets a free read on his last putt. It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what, you know, I was looking up today, or popped up really on my screen as I was doing some, you know, a project that we're working on, and it had the definition of a game, and it had, you know, the elements of the game, you know, the challenge, the strength of skill, and luck. That's, yeah, part of the definition. And so, which is, you know, what I think the Scots, you know, find, and the Irish find so interesting about the hard, hilly nature of the turf that they play on over there, because there's definitely a challenge and strength of skill required, and there's luck.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, normally people think luck is a bad thing, or, you know, something like, I'd rather have skill than luck, you know, as much people talk about how much they want to be prepared, or how much they want to practice, so they don't have to rely on luck. And it's not that you have to rely on it, but it's just a part of it.
Right. And, you know, it's just, that's right. It's just a part of it. And, you know, I think that's one of the things, I think, in a world that becomes where science is kind of whisking away some of the mystique and mystery of life, seemingly, there's something about luck that stays out there as this metaphysical. Is it a metaphysical thing? Can we control it? I mean, Hogan, among other people, said, you know, the more I practice, the luckier I get. and so, you know, can we control this? It's an interesting question. And why does it happen? You know,
when Fred Couples won, didn't on hole 12, he hit it short and it like should have rolled down into the creek, but didn't.
Yeah. One of the mysteries of the Masters. That's definitely at the near the top of the list. Yes. How does that ball not go down into the water?
Yeah. We've seen it a million times. It goes down, anything short rolls into the water. And so
sure.
Somehow his didn't. Yeah, it's crazy. Okay, Pete, do you have any last thoughts on Phil before we wrap it up?
Well, you know, it was Phil. Not only was that Masters, you know, Phil's coming out party, so to speak, but, you know, that was such an iconic tournament for some other things that happened there. That was Arnold Palmer's last Masters. And wow. So, you know, the chance to, you know, see Arnie on Friday come up the 18th green was, you know, a terrific thing. That weekend, you know, Tom Watson's longtime caddy, Bruce Edwards, passed away from ALS. And Watson, you know, played on for Bruce, and so it was there were a lot of great things, you know, that make the Masters what it is that that happened there. And it's always a great stage and a great celebration for all golfers.
Yeah, I pulled up Phil's kind of Masters resume, and as much as we talk about him, I kind of think he might be a little bit underrated. In his career in the Masters, he has 15 top tens.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
And most of those are top fives. This one stretch starting in 1999, he went 6th, 7th, 3rd, 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 1st, 10th, 1st, 24th, 5th, 5th, 1st, 27th, 3rd, 54th, cut. 2015, he got 2nd, cut. 2017, 22nd, then 36. So that's wild. I he's been there just about, probably even more than Tiger, if you count Tiger's, you know, almost setbacks that he's had with injury and stuff.
Yeah, Phil's come on, you know, I mean, Phil's career, you know, has lasted. He's managed to keep his length and keep his skills, you know, as he's getting, how old is he now? Is he 46 or 7? Is he older than that?
He is 49.
That's the one, you know. So, it was a while for him to come out, you know, but once he did, of course, that really just changed the narrative, you know, and now you look at his record and you say, wow, that's terrific. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, he's got those firsts and that seems to validate, you know, everything else, but without the firsts, wouldn't it have been a great record?
Well, I think so.
Yeah, I do too. And, And, you know, accomplishment is an interesting thing when you look at it from that standpoint, that, that the world and what the world is saying is one thing, but what do you say? How do you like that finish for fifth? I mean, was that a satisfying outcome for you? And I think most golfers would say, yes. You know, if it was, if you felt that it was a good effort, then the effort was its own reward.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I know you've been working on making some videos on your phone. Phil has kind of taken a second life on Instagram in the past year. I'm sure you're probably not too aware of it, but he almost creates these comedy videos. There's one, he's sitting in his car driving to a tournament and like putting his thumb up and down like this for about 30 seconds. And he's like, oh, hi there. And he's like, you may be wondering what I'm doing. And he's like, I'm working on my thumb, you know, thumb exercises. He's like, he says, then he's like, when the putts go down, the thumbs go up. So he's getting ready to make all the putts.
I'm glad that that side of these guys is coming out, because that's terrific. That's a motivation for me to get on Instagram. I guess this will be the week.
Yeah, could be. Okay, Pete, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you next time. We'll talk about Tiger in 2005.
Clean contact.
Terrific. I look forward to it.
I hit it again, because that shot was a defining moment. And when a defining moment comes along, you define the moment, or the moment defines you.
Well, here it comes.